Hey humans,
want to optimize your cardiovascular health with real data? SciFox Health offers the easiest, most affordable blood biomarker testing kits. Test 17 key biomarkers like cholesterol, ApoB, and hemoglobin A1C from the comfort of your own home and get results at your fingertips in just a few days. Get 20% off at SciFoxHealth.com/Yami. Know your biomarkers and live healthier.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Big food survives on misinformation. If you think about this, if one day eggs are healthy and one day eggs are not healthy and one day cholesterol is good and one day cholesterol is bad, we all throw up our hands and say, yeah, who cares? But the truth is the signal has been in the noise all along and the signal is getting more and more pure. And as time goes on, the data is there so much so that professional societies can't ignore it. Any rational person can't ignore it.
You are here for a reason, but navigating this human life can be challenging. How do you care for your body, mind, and spirit to make the most of your time here on Earth? How can you harness your incredible human potential? In this podcast, we explore these questions and more to help you craft your best life yet. Welcome to I Am Human. Welcome, humans, and welcome to another episode of I Am Human. I am your host, Dr. Yami, and it's my pleasure to be here with you today. Thank you so much for joining me. And if you are new to the show, welcome. I hope you love it. I hope that you will subscribe, review, and share this episode if you found it helpful. So to be human means that you may choose to eat what everybody else eats, which in the United States at this point, it's eating the rich food of kings and queens, these calorie-dense foods, lots of meat, lots of fried foods. They're rich, they're delicious. But it also means to deliberately choose to eat in a way that supports heart health and increases your likelihood of longevity, of health, well-being, of a long, healthy, well-lived life. And our guest today, Dr. Andrew Freeman, he is a cardiologist. He is an expert in this. So Andrew M. Freeman, MD, FACC, FACP, joined National Jewish Health in Denver, Colorado, after completing his training in Philadelphia at Temple University. He completed his internal medicine training at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, and attended medical school at Sunny Buffalo with research honors after graduating summa cum laude from Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. At National Jewish, he serves as Director of Clinical Cardiology and the Director of Cardiovascular Prevention and Wellness, and is an Associate Professor of Medicine. Dr. Freeman also hosts a monthly Walk with a Doc program in the Denver area, where he volunteers his time to walk with patients on Saturday mornings to teach key health concepts, but also to explore using exercise as medicine for the greater good of the public. Dr. Freeman holds leadership positions in the Colorado American College of Cardiology, as well as at the national level, including being a founding chair of the Lifestyle and Nutrition Work Group, and has sat on the steering committee for the Cardiovascular Disease Prevention Council and numerous other committees. At National Jewish Health, he started and oversees the Ornish Intensive Cardiac Rehab Program. He regularly publishes scholarly manuscripts on plant-based nutrition, and he is a regular feature at VegFest Colorado and continues to expand his teaching and messages of prevention and wellness all over Colorado. And he's just so passionate. So in this episode, we talk about his plant-based journey, his training, how things evolved over time, how he discovered plant-based nutrition and how it's changed and influenced his medical practice. We talk about the most common cardiovascular conditions that he sees and treats, what the most critical factors that lead to the development of heart disease. We talk about myths and misinformation in society, why they happen, and you know how they're propagated. We talk about if a whole foods plant-based diet has enough evidence to say that it decreases our risk of heart disease, enough to recommend it for everybody. And we talk about what data as adults we should all know, what stats we should know about ourselves to know whether we're at risk for cardiovascular disease or metabolic health. We talk a little bit about atrial fibrillation, and we also talk about endurance athletes and, you know, some of the thoughts he has on that. It's an excellent episode. Dr. Freeman was so kind to do this while he was on call, and the poor guy was getting pinged and paged. He was on call to do echoes. So it's a shorter episode, but it is very impactful and very practical and applicable. So I hope that you love it. And I thank you for being here again. Enjoy this episode and have a very plantastic day.
The information on this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not meant to replace careful evaluation and treatment. If you have concerns about your health or well-being, please consult a healthcare professional.
Dr. Andrew Freeman, welcome to I Am Human. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Yes, thanks so much for having me.
Well, you did such a fabulous job with your talk at the Plant-Based Prevention of Disease Conference, and I'm excited for my audience to get to know you a little bit better and to get some refreshers on the importance of knowing about cardiovascular disease, what causes it, and what we can do to prevent it. So first, if you could just tell us about your plant-based journey, how did you discover plant-based nutrition?
It's interesting. So I grew up on the East Coast in New York, used to eating very poorly, you know, very rich foods, you know, 7 inches of pastrami or 3 inches of cream cheese on a bagel or a piece of pizza weighed 5 pounds or so many bad things. And when I was growing up, it never really made sense to me. But all of my friends' parents were dropping dead or having bypass surgery or breast cancer or colon cancer, whatever it may be. And we were really eating and drinking like kings and queens and barely moving. And so then I went through my training, and like every good trainee, you know, you sort of conform, right? You can't stick out too much because nobody will like you, and then you won't get through your training. So did my thing and came out of training. I was in Rhode Island, which has its unique unhealthy options. And then I was in Philadelphia, which has a mixture of some of the Southern influence of really bad foods combined with cheesesteaks and greasy burgers and whatnot. So finished my training there. And then I came out to Colorado and started my practice. And like everybody else, you know, was throwing medications at people and hoping that they would get better. And some people got better, but most people didn't get better for very long. And then I started a program. I reached out to a guy named Dr. David Sabger in Ohio when I was in fellowship, who was starting a program called Walk with a Doc. And I saw a little blurb of him in a magazine somewhere. And I'm like, oh, this would be amazing to reach out to him and see if I can get this going when I start when I finish fellowship and start practice. And so I did just that. I started the program. We've actually been running it for 14 years now at this point. And it's been amazing. And so as part of that transformation, you know, I started walking with my patients on a Saturday and really sort of walking the walk, but I wasn't really eating the eat, so to speak, right? So I would say to my patients, hey, you just had whatever and you shouldn't eat a cheesesteak or you shouldn't eat bacon or whatever it may be. And we did that in fellowship too, right? We'd say to the patient who just had bypass surgery in their 50s, hey, you really should skip the cheesesteaks. And then we'd all get, you know, cheesesteaks, often free cheesesteaks for lunch, kind of completely opposite to the advice we would be giving. So anyway, so this was something I was internally wrestling with. And we went on a family vacation up to Steamboat, Colorado, which is a really nice ski town in the summer. It's even more beautiful. And ate a greasy cheeseburger for dinner. And I was finishing up my last part of the China study. And then from that point forward, I've been vegan ever since. And I realized that there was so much data and so much information that I had never been privy to and never taught during my training that I couldn't ignore it anymore. And so I went on this myself in Philadelphia, where I trained. I had gained probably 20 pounds plus with a very stressful fellowship and lots of good cheesesteaks and other bad foods around. And I dropped that weight within 3 or 4 months. I redid my life insurance physical, believe it or not, and got a rebate check in the mail. And I was absolutely hooked. And I really started doing it with my patients. And at that point, I was seeing, for the first time in my career, remission or cure of chronic diseases like diabetes and high blood pressure, angina, whatever it may be. And I was just blown away. And as you can imagine, this was 12, 13, 14 years ago, definitely swimming upstream in a field of cardiology that did not really embrace this as an approach. You know, I vividly remember being called out by my chief of medicine in various meetings. If Dr. Freeman approves this, we should, you know, with that kind of the, you know, contempt. And now, all these years later, it's in every professional society guideline. It's mainstream. You know, I did bring this to the American College of Cardiology, and I helped to co-found the Nutrition and Lifestyle Work Group, which did not exist prior to me bringing it there, which is kind of mind-blowing, frankly. And that group has published tons of papers, so I've been privileged to work with some very prolific writers and been part of lots of different projects to get lifestyle medicine in the mainstream of cardiology. And we have. We've made a lot of impacts, and we continue to do so. And the work group is celebrating, I think it'll be its 10th year this year. And it's done some amazing work. And so here I am doing this in everyday practice. And now people actually seek me out. My administration loves that people come from the surrounding states, you know, to find somebody who understands how to apply the best of sort of Western medicine and the best of lifestyle medicine for the ultimate in outcomes. And it's been really, really lovely. So, you know, excited to really implement this in everyday practice.
That's an amazing story. Thank you so much for doing that. And for, you know, I just love it how people discover something, they realize that it's a good thing to do, and then they become advocates and they really help bring it to other people as well and bring it to the masses. And that's a big deal. I'm just curious, how did you discover that book, The China Study? Did somebody give it to you? Were you just browsing the bookstore? How did you find it?
You know, I started when I was working on using exercise as medicine with Walk with a Doc. You know, I've always told people that they should eat better, more plants. But I did my own research. I, you know, attended a number of talks. I remember very vividly that I saw a talk that Dean Ornish gave, and it was earth-shattering. It literally broke the mold in my brain. And, you know, I said, all right, I got to look more into this. And, you know, I came across the China Study. I came across Diet for a New America, the original John Robbins book you may have seen. I started watching all the documentaries I could possibly watch. I started going to professional society meetings. I joined the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. You know, I really went all in because to me, the results that you can see from lifestyle medicine are so powerful, the magnitude is so large, and the cost is so low that it's sort of a no-brainer, right? I mean, I don't know why people wouldn't be doing this. You know, it's funny, I actually was taking care for a while of a lawyer who was actively trying to consider, I don't know if you would call it suing people, but at least sending legal notices to physicians who didn't offer lifestyle medicine as a primary choice. This is sort of a neglect mechanism. Wow. Now, I'm not a big fan of suing doctors, but nonetheless, I thought it was an interesting concept at the time. So
it'd probably get people's attention if they got a letter in the mail from a lawyer. You know, I think it would definitely get my attention as a physician.
Yes.
Well, you've kind of already started answering this, but tell me, in what ways has your plant-based journey influenced your medical practice? So once you discovered this and tested it on yourself and learned more about it, do you feel like you have been more vocal with your patients and with other physicians and colleagues?
Totally. I mean, I think a lot of my colleagues were blown away when they would see results. And these are colleagues that are not necessarily in my own specialty, right? People don't normally see, you know, 10 different cardiologists in the same practice. But, you know, I work at a very large hospital, lots of different specialists, a pulmonologist, you know, somebody who had bad asthma would suddenly be in remission, or their rheumatoid arthritis would be under control, or their osteoarthritis would be under control, or, hey, Freeman, what did you do to this guy? His, you know, interstitial lung disease seems to have halted progression. And really, I did nothing, right? I just had them change their lifestyle. And the results really have been extraordinary, so much so that there's probably in the range of 10 plus docs who are living this way themselves. which I never thought would be the case. I thought I would always be the only guy. Now, interestingly, you know, there's only a couple of plant-based cardiologists in our entire state, which is kind of nuts when you think about it, because, you know, our professional society guidelines indicate this approach, and yet people aren't actually doing it. You know, my very good friend, colleague, and mentor, Kim Williams, said in this very famous quote you probably heard, you know, there's two types of cardiologists, right? Those who are plant-based and those who don't know the data, which is, of course, a very controversial way of saying that people don't necessarily know what they don't know. And that's also part of the reason that I started doing the type of talk that I do, where every year I kind of put together the data, the science, the evidence, the papers that would be missed by many people because they're not reading nutrition research or literature. So bottom line is I'm very, very excited to incorporate this into everyday practice and every consultation, every follow-up patient. You know, I'll say to them, hey, what'd you have for dinner? How much exercise are you getting in? And just those basic things often lead to really good conversations and impetus to make the changes that people need to make.
Well, you said it yourself at the beginning of your interview that there's a lot of cognitive dissonance that goes into it because we are inundated in this world where highly processed foods, you know, are just all around us. It's hard to even think about, okay, I'm going to stop eating this cheeseburger and Philly cheesesteak and all of these things. So I'm just maybe going to ignore this or think it's not that important anyway. I don't have heart disease. It probably doesn't apply to me. You know, I think it's just so much easier as a human to fall into that motivational triad and just bury your head in the sand sometimes.
Well, I mean, even when we go to shop, like I can vividly remember in medical school, you know, it was very easy when you're on a budget to go to McDonald's for dinner and eat dinner for a dollar. But then when you think about it, you're like, oh, this is some sort of sentient being that's been ground up into this burger, you know, and you're like, oh, I guess I'm not going to think about that. And you wolf it down and move on. But at the end of the day, then you wonder what kind of harm comes your way when you eat this way. And it's funny, you don't get these warnings. Like, can you imagine, like, if you were to go to Costco and there was that $1.50 hot dog that has probably caused so many cases of cancer in the US, if there was a giant warning sign that said, this is only $1.50, but be forewarned, it is in the same category as cigarettes. Enjoy, right? People wouldn't do it. And I think that knowledge is power and it hurts. The truth really hurts. And I guess I would say, and maybe you've had similar experiences, I'm sure perhaps as well. When I first started doing this, my approach to talking to people about it was much, you know, I'm from New York originally, very direct to begin with, but now I have a little bit more of a polished way so I don't like completely offend somebody who might not be interested in this approach. We have these patient ombudsmen or whatever they call them now, you know, where somebody would go and say, well, that cardiologist told me I can never eat a hot dog ever again. I want a new cardiologist. And the truth is, you know, that happened, right? And think about how silly that is. I mean, so the new cardiologist is going to say, yeah, you can eat hot dogs. I mean, and they probably did, to tell you the truth, but side note, you know, it's just kind of dangerous. So bottom line is, I think as I have evolved in my approach, I try to understand where people are coming from and help them make the changes they want to make. But these days, people don't want to be on medicines. They don't want the cost associated with all sorts of things. And it's a lot easier to say, hey, you got to do this, and here's why. So,
September 29th is World Heart Day to raise awareness of the number one global cause of death, cardiovascular disease. We know that two critical risk factors for the development of cardiovascular disease are high cholesterol and diabetes. But so many people are living with high cholesterol and elevated blood sugars without a clue. If you want to live a longer, healthier life, it is essential to know your numbers so that you can take control of your health and make changes as needed. But we all know that getting labs is not an easy task. First, you have to see your doctor. Then they have to order the labs. Then you go to the lab and hope they can draw your blood without too much pain. And then wait for results. Once you have the results, you may not even know what they mean. What if there was a better way? SciFox Health has pioneered a novel approach to create the most comprehensive, most convenient, and least expensive at-home blood test on the market. They are the easiest, most affordable way to check your blood biomarkers. They give you the ability to test 17 critical blood biomarkers in a single at-home kit. It's easy to use and offered at an incredibly low price. It's clinically accurate, and you don't need a doctor's order to obtain it.
If you want to decrease your risk of cardiovascular disease, there are several key biomarkers that can give you a picture of your cardiovascular and metabolic health. The SciFox Health Kit includes total cholesterol, triglycerides, HDL, LDL, ApoB, apolipoprotein A1, and hemoglobin A1c. ApoB is now being recognized as an important indicator of cardiovascular health, and most people have never had this blood test measured. SciFox Health reports are not just raw data. The team at SciFox created a unique scoring system called the Axes of Wellness that spans different health and lifestyle categories, such as inflammation, metabolic, and cardiovascular health. With this, they take the guesswork out of interpreting your results and empower you with actionable insights to improve your wellness. You can view your results in your secure dashboard, which includes personalized recommendations. It's very easy and convenient. Your kit is mailed directly to your home. Then you open your kit and simply follow the instructions. You supply just a few drops of blood and mail it back in a prepaid envelope. And incredibly, you get your results in a few days. It really is that simple. You don't need to drive anywhere or call the doctor's office repeatedly to get results. It's affordable and you have actionable data at your fingertips. Before I completed my first SciFox Health Kit, I had never had my ApoB measured, and I was so glad to have this piece of data about my cardiovascular health. SciFox Health is the easiest, most affordable way to routinely check your blood biomarkers and stay on top of your health. I'm so excited to be working with SciFox Health. Visit scifoxhealth.com/yami to get 20% off to test your blood at home and begin working toward a healthier you. That's scifoxhealth.com/yami. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then, when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. Renting from Armoire is perfect for me because I love fashion. I get bored easily. I love to try new things with low commitment, and I'm also a minimalist who is budget conscious. Clothing rental just makes sense. It's so fun. You get to try new styles that you may not be brave enough to buy and keep forever, and your wardrobe stays fresh and updated. We live in a small old house with tiny closets that get cluttered easily, but I love clothes. I don't want to compromise. I want to look cute and feel great, and with clothing rental, it's a win-win. My first shipment of rental items arrived quickly, and all my items were neatly folded, clean, and ready to wear. The first item I tried on was a pair of overalls from Wild Fang, and I've already worn them 3 times because they're adorable and so soft and comfy. Today, I'm wearing a beautiful floral linen wrap dress from Yumi Kim, and I feel so feminine. It's really elevated my mood. I have 4 more items to try this week, including some cute corduroy wide leg ankle pants, a pair of super wide leg jeans, a sophisticated midi dress, and a puffy sleeve V-neck sweater. Getting dressed in the morning is exciting, and I feel great all day. There are so many reasons to try Armoire. First and foremost, you'll always have something new to wear without the hassle and closet clutter. It's affordable. They have many plans to choose from, depending on how often you'd like to swap out your outfits, but it could actually save you money in the long run. It's sustainable. You no longer have to feel bad about only wearing an outfit once, letting it sit in your closet for years until you finally donate it. It also feels good to support a company that is women-founded and women-led. And finally, Armoire can help you define your personal style. It gives you recommendations based on your body type and what you already like, but it also gives you the freedom to explore different styles you may not otherwise buy. If you've never tried something like this before but feel intrigued, I recommend that you give it a try. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/Dr. Yami. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/DRYAMI, to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
What are the most critical factors that lead to the development of heart disease? And maybe you can also just, while you're answering that, talk about what are the most common cardiovascular conditions that you do see and treat so that we can kind of get an idea of when it comes to cardiovascular disease, what is that really?
Yeah. So cardiovascular disease is the most vague term possible, right? So roughly 50% of Americans have hypertension and by definition, some form of heart disease. So of course I see all of that, but I see all the weird stuff too, because we're a tertiary quaternary referral center. So I see everything from, you know, rare diseases like sarcoidosis and pulmonary arterial hypertension to the routine coronary disease and stents and bypass and heart failure with preserved ejection fraction and high cholesterol and high lipoprotein A and all the different things that everybody sees. I see them all. And the truth is that there's really no disease that doesn't respond. I know there's a lot of double negatives, but every disease responds to lifestyle medicine. Some respond with a cure or remission, and some respond with halting of the disease process. You know, and I would tell you, and maybe you have the same experience I do, but you know, maybe people come sometimes, they've had, you know, 17 stents and 3 bypass surgeries, and they want me to fix them, right? And I some of these people have significant damage where I can't fix them, but I can certainly get them better. And so there's a lot of that kind of conversation where people seek me out after really bad things have happened. And so the question is, where does this all start? Well, we know if you go back in time to like World War I, the Vietnam War, the Korean War, that American vets, you know, in their 20s carrying these, you know, 100-pound backpacks would drop dead for one reason or another. And we did autopsies on a lot of them, and they all had premature coronary disease because they were eating these shelf-stable rations, right, that were mostly meat and potatoes that were highly processed. Whereas if you look at the Asian counterparts, they were eating mostly rice, vegetables, maybe a little fish, did not have the same degree of coronary disease. So it starts very early in life. Some would even say it starts in utero, right? So what our mom eats affects what our preferences are and even can affect outcomes later in life, which is really interesting to think about. The next part of it, of course, is the culture part. So another great Kim Williams saying is, don't let your culture hold you hostage. Right. So whether you grew up in the Deep South or you grew up in the Northeast or you grew up in the Western United States or Wisconsin with cheese curds and whatever, it doesn't mean that you can't change your diet. And the thing that I find fascinating is, you know, we get together all the time as families. You get together for the New Year, for Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever it may be. You get together for Thanksgiving. And what do? We celebrate life with each other and we poison each other with things like ham and hot dogs and whatever else. You know, Father's Day just came around. We belong to a place that has like a pool and some barbecues. And of course, you know, we're making veggie kebabs and everyone else is making hot dogs and they're poisoning their beloved dads, if you will, right? So it's such a very interesting, awful thing. And so I think getting people to make changes early in life so that it becomes the norm is really the key. And it's so interesting because one of the things that I see a lot of, and you probably do too, is that many times kids, younger generations, become plant-based before their parents. And then the parents say, oh, my son just decided to do this. Maybe there's some real wisdom in this. And there is.
Definitely seeing it pick up more in the younger generations for a variety of reasons. But I think, thankfully, more and more people are starting to realize that they do have more control over their well-being, their health, and longevity. And they're not just going to let the standard American diet or the standard American culture just take them down this predestined path of, you know, heart disease, diabetes, stroke, dementia, all of these things. So thankfully that is changing. But one thing I have been seeing, and you know, I know that this is probably has always been the case, but just like a lot of dietary confusion that I feel like is getting worse. And that is cholesterol doesn't matter. Saturated fat doesn't matter. I've even heard we should eat a high cholesterol diet because it's better for building muscle. I've heard that one before. So how can we approach that when there's so many myths and misinformation in our society?
So let's just take the nutrition out of it for a minute, right? If everybody in the world decided to eat the fish that some professional societies still recommend, or we were to eat a, all of us were to eat the traditional sort of American style ketogenic diet. First of all, it'd be incredibly expensive, but the environmental impact would be completely unsustainable. We'd have no fish in the oceans, and we'd run out of meat and highly processed foods like this very, very quickly. So, and the environmental impact is not to be sold short. I want to point out that we are headed towards environmental crisis. We know that planetary health and human health are deeply entwined. And if we can't keep our environment healthy, we won't have a place to live. So take those out of the equation. But remember this, big food survives on misinformation. If you think about this, if one day eggs are healthy and one day eggs are not healthy and one day cholesterol is good and one day cholesterol is bad, we all throw up our hands and say, yeah, who cares? But the truth is the signal has been in the noise all along and the signal is getting more and more pure. And as time goes on, the data is there so much so that professional societies can't ignore it. Any rational person can't ignore it. And so a low-fat, whole-food, plant-based diet is truly the best way to keep people alive. Now, if you go back in time and you look at some of the people who have been, you know, fossilized or caught in these crazy earth disasters or whatever, most of the time they had grains or seeds or vegetables or whatever in their guts, their teeth, etc. You know, interestingly, you may have seen there have been some studies over the years where they've done CAT scans of the Egyptian pharaohs, the mummies, and they all had coronary atherosclerosis, right? This was the royalty. And many of these people were in their 30s or 40s, and they had significant atherosclerosis. So I always tell people, and the mantra that I tell people is that if you can eat like a peasant, you can live like a king or a queen. It's a difficult concept for people to understand. You know, peasants are eating the rich, not eating the rich foods that the royalty are eating.
But the goal, hopefully for a lot of people, is to live a long, healthy life, feeling as good as possible. So now that we know better, we can do better, right? Back then, we didn't have, you know, ways to look inside the heart and look inside the vessels and realize how our choices were affecting our coronary arteries. But now we do. And the good news is, even though you say eat like a peasant, honestly, if you really look at the way we eat, it's pretty amazing and luxurious. We were both at the Peapod conference. Let me tell you, we did not suffer in the least. So there was no suffering happening with that food.
No, and when I say eating like a peasant, it means the inexpensive foods, right? So if you look at the cost per plate, even though they were well-seasoned and colorful and bright and vibrant, they were much less than the cost of a typical, you know, fancy plate at a steakhouse or whatever it might
be. Steak dinner, yeah.
Right? We're eating beans and rice in some form or another, and a bunch of vegetables and fruits, easy to do and inexpensive. So
what's the number one reason that the majority of us are going to die? What's the number one cause of death in our country?
So another Kim Williams adage I use commonly is, as we get older, we're all more likely to die. I think most people can accept that. Most of us from heart disease, that's also true. I just don't want it to be my fault, is what Kim Williams would say. And I use that a lot with my patients, is how do you make it not your fault? And that's where excellent lifestyle comes in, and in the right situations, pharmacologic therapy as well. And I think that most of us are going to die from heart disease. It's not COVID, it's not breast cancer, it's not war, it's not fighting, it's heart disease. And I don't think that people realize it as much. You know, we get all bent out of shape over these conflicts, but the thing that's killing all of human society is heart disease and lifestyle poor choices.
And that's what I try to convey to the parents of my patients as well. Because as a pediatrician, I feel like my job is prevention. That's like the number one thing I can do, is to help instill these habits and behaviors, which are gold. They're like treasure for these children to continue on their lives, because that's what's going to give them their health, well-being, and longevity. So we need to think about our kids and decreasing their risk of heart disease and diabetes and stroke starting now. Okay, what data should all adults know about their health? What are things that we should, the stats that we should know regularly or on a yearly basis?
I think it's important that people first know some of their numbers. So what's your average blood pressure running? I think that's really helpful. Knowing your body mass index, I think that's really helpful. Knowing your cholesterol is really helpful. And also knowing lipoprotein A. So a lot of people are starting to check this and hear about it, but 1 in 5 people worldwide has an elevated lipoprotein A, and it's associated with early heart disease. and it's 90% genetic. So what you eat doesn't necessarily have an impact, but the environment that you put your genes in may reduce that risk. So I think it's important for people to know that. And then I think it's important once in a while to have a blood count and a blood chemistry, all the usual stuff that we would check just to make sure that there's no anemia or, you know, kidney disease that sometimes can creep in when we least expect it. And especially Americans, as we eat these very high, high, high protein diets and processed food diets, kidney disease is super on the rise. And of course, kidney disease leads to earlier heart disease as well. I think those are the big ones. And then really, I think when it comes to metrics, I encourage people to get 30 minutes in a day of breathlessness of some form. So exercising, eating well, getting 7 hours of uninterrupted sleep a night, getting rid of stress in some mindful way, and then connecting with others. I think that's a really powerful way to keep away doctors if you can.
One thing that I realized, you know, my parents are aging and I have my grandparents are still alive. And one thing that I've realized is very common once you get older is atrial fibrillation. And I'm a pediatrician, so I forgot all of my adult medicine when it comes to stuff like this. But does our diet and lifestyle choices decrease our risk of AFib as well?
Well, so AFib is epidemic, and particularly as we get older, the stats are like once you hit your 70s, 80s, or 90s, almost everybody is going to have some amount of AFib in most cases.
Yeah.
And it turns out that one of the big drivers for that, of course, is hypertension. So if we can get people to keep their blood pressure good and under control for their life, their risk of AFib would certainly be lower. We also know that some dietary choices can make the burden of AFib higher, and particularly the standard American diet being a big trigger, along with all the stimulants we put in many of our foods. So I think that that's there. And I think if we can control the substrate, right, our blood pressure, and then what would lead to left atrial enlargement, which can lead to AFib, if we can get that under control, I think the burden would be a lot less. You know, but AFib is one of those things that seems to be epidemic, along with diabetes and obesity and heart failure and sleep apnea. It seems like the patients that I take care of that have hit 70, 80, 90 have many of those comorbid conditions and sometimes all of them. You know, I always joke when I first started in this medicine career, probably you too, you would see patients who had one issue. And now one issue patients are so rare, it's like winning the lottery.
Yeah, you're like, oh, you're easy. Right. And the list of medications can be so long. And yeah, my husband's an internal medicine doctor. So it is an extreme difference between my little newborns that are fresh and perfect and no chronic medical illnesses and then and his patients. Okay, I'm sneaking this one in for my own benefit, but I am an athlete and I love endurance things. So right now I'm currently doing 70.3 Ironmans, but maybe someday a full Ironman, maybe. I'm curious about people that push their limits a little bit more. Should people like that see a cardiologist preventively just to make sure that there's no like hypertrophic cardiomyopathy or, you know, arrhythmias that they're causing or any of that kind of thing?
It's a loaded question and it's controversial depending on what part of the world you live in, what kind of screening athletes get. My own personal suggestion would be to be careful with the ultra marathons and the Ironmans and all that, because there is evidence that there is troponin leaks, right? So the heart muscle damage, even some degrees of fibrosis that have been shown on cardiac MRI with some of the long runs. And remember, the very first person who ran a marathon in ancient Greek mythology died, right? So what I always tell people is if, and we have this thing, the Leadville 100, you may have heard of about, it's a, you know, sort of epic. If you... you know, at the end of your training, all your toenails have disappeared. If you need a Sherpa at the end of your race because your brain doesn't function, it might be pushing the envelope just a bit much. Now, there's something to be said that you have the willpower to overdrive all of these things. Sure, I get that. And maybe that's a certain type of pleasure for a certain type of patient or a certain type of person. But I would say that exercise at a level that is challenging is plenty. And then if you're up for the incredible, I'm going to, you know, summit the Himalayas and Mount Fuji and all these things that people want to do all over the place, and great, just be forewarned that there is danger and you want to make sure that you're in good shape to do it. And, you know, I certainly have taken care of patients over the years who, you know, they want to climb Kilimanjaro, whatever it may be, and they're nowhere ready to do that. And so it's important that you work with a physician who kind of gets that. And then see what's right for you. And of course, if you have symptoms, don't ignore them, right? So if you're out there and you're running your race and all of a sudden it feels like you have the heaviest weight on your chest you've ever had, probably should stop. And yes, I understand that it is miserable to do that, especially when you've gone 79% of the race or whatever it is. But at the same point, it's not worth dying over. So I always tell people to know their limits. And if you're not one of those people who needs that pleasure of defeating your body's mechanism to turn off, you don't have to go that extreme. But if you enjoy it, you know, don't let me stand in your way, but be forewarned that there are people who can do damage to themselves unwittingly. And then I've also taken care of many of these ultra endurance athletes who also don't eat well. And let me explain that there's been lots of studies that show that people who are plant-based, whole food, low fat, et cetera, some people have done temperature studies and they run a degree or so cooler on the long run, which is pretty amazing when you think about it, that they have more resilience and antioxidant reserve to recover from some of the damage that may occur. So I encourage people that if they are going to do this, to really go all in with the lifestyle. So sort of a long-winded answer to say your mileage may vary and be careful.
Yeah. No, I think that's an excellent answer. And I don't push myself to the point of harm because I can't even get a little nauseated when I exercise. I stop right away. So I'll never be one of those crazy extreme persons, but I'm always curious about what is the limit for each person where you're tipping over into causing more inflammation. So thank you for that. All right, Dr. Freeman, this has been excellent. So let's wrap it up because I know that you are on call and busy. So what do you wish more people knew?
I wish that more people knew that the lifestyle approach that you and I always talk about is truly not just a weird hippie thing, but rather very mainstream, evidence-based and evidence-supported. And the results are truly extraordinary. And I know it's easy for me to say that, but when you experience outcomes like I have seen, you know, when you see diseases go into remission, it's the most powerful and recharging thing that I do. And I wish more and more people would see the light, so to speak. And so my hope is that everybody who does this type of medicine will enable their patients to further spread the word for them. And of course, you know, the joke is, how do you know someone's plant-based? They tell you, right? But I would also say that at the end of the day, when somebody comes in and they look well and they've stopped aging and they feel great and they weren't like that before, it's an amazing time to say, please share this with your family, share this with your friends, share this with your neighbors, whoever it may be.
Love that. That's great. How do you define success in this lifetime?
Well, you could argue that if you go by some of those ancient biblical prose, right? If you save one life, you've saved them all. So I hope that I've saved at least one life. But really for me, my goal would be to get the messages that I'm sharing to the mainstream, so much so that people find it absurd that they would go out and eat a fast food cheeseburger that's shelf stable for 3 years. Just insane. It's not even possible. Like, have you ever imagined that if you were to go out to dinner, and we have fortunate where we live in Denver, we have lots of plant-based restaurants available to us, which are great. And some are less healthy than others. But wouldn't it be amazing if you could go out anywhere and you wouldn't even have to think about the health of the foods you were eating because everybody got it? That would be success. I don't Yes. think that's going to happen in my lifetime, but I sure would love it if it would.
Well, thanks for being an advocate for it and contributing to making that happen. But yes, the healthy choice, the default choice, right? That's what we're aiming for. Is there a goal or dream that has evaded you or something that you have left on your bucket list that you'd be willing to share with us?
I mean, my bucket list, I'm still, you know, I'm only in my mid 40s. So my bucket list is very long about places I wish to travel and things I wish to do. You know, I think professionally speaking, I'd love to figure out a way to incorporate technology with the things that I do in a way that amplifies my efforts much more than one-on-one. And I love one-on-one medicine. It's just, it's intimate, it's powerful. The approaches are life-changing. It's lovely. But at the same point, I'd love to figure out a way to replicate that to the masses. And, you know, with the looming doctor shortage that we're supposedly going to have in the next couple of years, we really depend on that. And at the end of the day, our money spent on healthcare is probably not sustainable, and figuring out another way to do it would be powerful.
That's awesome. I'm glad that you have that interest and are going to work on that for us. Thank you. And what does it mean to be human?
I mean, I think being human is to understand that we all have flaws. We're all flawed and we're continually refining ourselves to get better. You know, in my particular world, that means changing my own lifestyle and helping other people get there. And I think honestly recognizing that being human is a complex and often difficult process that we need to embrace and get better at.
I love that. Thank you so much. Well, Dr. Freeman, thank you so much for your time today. If you could just tell my listeners where they can connect with you so that they can keep following your work.
Yeah, you can find me in lots of places where I give talks. You can find me on Twitter or X at HeartCureDoc. I also speak regularly at VegFest Colorado. My practice is at National Jewish Health in Denver. So if you're in the Colorado area, feel free to make an appointment or stop by. And then you might find me out on the hiking trails or biking or somewhere, but let's try to connect.
Nice. I love it. Well, thank you, Dr. Freeman, for everything that you do. And I hope that you have a very plantastic day.
All right. You too. Thanks for having me. My name is Dr. Andrew Freeman, and I am human.
Thank you for listening to another episode of I Am Human. I would be so honored if you subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode. We love our listeners and take your feedback seriously. If you have questions or constructive feedback, you can email us at podcast@dryami.com. That's podcast@dryami.com. I am your host, Dr. Yami Cazorla Lancaster. I Am Human is produced by myself and Alejandra Parra. Graphics designed by Alejandra Parra. Music by Angela Sof with Glowbox Productions and edited by the Castos production team. Remember, human, you are here for a reason. Have fun, explore, and live your life to the fullest.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.